It is Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. Welcome back. We're glad to say that it's Friday. And Friday here on Current State means live music Friday, music coming to you live every day on our program from Studio S here at WKAR, Michigan State University. Our special guests here today in East Lansing for a few performances. One of them is ours, Don Henry and Craig Carruthers. And they're going to open up with a song called BFD.
It ain't his fault that she went AWOL, 'cause he tried everything from A to Z. But now it's J and B, M&M's and KFC. He's trying hard to make himself believe it ain't no BFD. He's got CMT, no SEX. But that's okay. At least he ain't no SOB like that PhD who took his ex and ran off to LA. She liked CNN,
made fun of his TNN.
She always called it E-I-E-I-O.
Now their love is R-I-P.
At least he's F-R-E
E,
and he ain't crying on his P-I-L-L-O.
It ain't no BFD. He's got CMT, no SEX. But that's okay. At least he ain't no SOB like that PhD who took his ex and ran off to LA again.
So one night he ordered pizza for some R&R. The NFL.
And a delivery girl named Lisa stole his heart when she rang his bell.
Now they're in LUVXTC. No SEX
yet,
but that's A-OK. 'Cause he feels like a B-I-P with all of her TLC. ASAP, she'll be his fiance.
A.
And that's BFD in a real good way. Hey, ba da ba 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 ba.
Oh, it's a good way to get the show started here today. We got a couple of wordsmiths with us, obviously, here today. Don Henry and Craig Carruthers are Nashville songwriters and performers in their own right, as you can tell, and they'll be with us all this hour here on Current State. That comes from their most recent CD, 2FByCar, 2FBYCR. So you had a lot of fun with letters and words in that one. More from Don and Craig coming up here in just a little bit. I'm Mark Bayshore. At the top of our program here today, as we've been reporting this week, the Capital Area Transportation Authority, CATA, has recently offered alternative plans for a proposed bus rapid transit system that would run from the state capitol in Lansing to Meridian Township. The agency and the plan supporters say such a transit model would provide faster bus service to its customers and spur economic development along Grand River and Michigan Avenues. There's been plenty of opposition, though, to the plan, much from business owners who say the BRT would make it physically more difficult for customers to access their shops. Yesterday on this program, we heard from one of them, Ingham County Circuit Judge Bill Collette, who's also a member of the group Stop CATA's BRT. Today we hear from a top official at CATA. Debbie Alexander is the agency's assistant executive director. She joins me now in the studio to talk about the finer points of the revised BRT plan and the way ahead. Deb, welcome back.
Thank you.
CATA just wrapped up a series of three public forums on the BRT revised plans. They were held in Lansing, East Lansing, and Meridian Township. What's been the outcome of those three gatherings, and describe the atmosphere at these?
You bet. So we had a very nice turnout at each meeting, over 100 people at each meeting to look at. I want to clarify, these are not alternatives. These are ideas that we could explore further to address some of the concerns that have been raised by the community. So some of them are just segment-based. They're not for the entire corridor, including near the area where the businesses are concerned about access.
Okay. And the atmosphere at these meetings, generally good, generally rough going, what?
I would say that the atmosphere was very engaged. There are passions on both sides of this issue, and so that was demonstrated in the meeting.
Talk to go a little bit deeper with us on the kinds of alternatives that you've put on the table here.
So again, I'll stress they're not alternatives. They're segment-based decisions. So for example, we put on an idea that could go into any alignment, which is a revised access to Frandor. The community did express a very strong desire to continue to go closer into that property. So that's one idea. Another idea is whether or not we would use dedicated lanes to access the stops in the Meridian Township area, and there are a variety of ways to do that.
Do you have a particular favorite iteration of this?
My favorite is what we have in place today. It's the current plan.
The original. Okay.
And the reason it's my favorite is because not only it accomplishes the goals of the region, the region is looking to grow this Main Street. It has a vision to become a world-class city and community. And in order to do that, we have to have infrastructure that allows for more population, jobs, and housing growth. The only way to do that is to, because we're in a built environment, we can't just expand our roadway out of this. And the way to do that is to separate the buses from the auto, which gives both of them improved travel time.
Well, Bill Collette is one of the BRT's harshest critics. He was our guest here yesterday. He alleged, getting back to the meetings that took place this week, he alleged yesterday here on Current State that CATA put the clamps on people attending some of these meetings. Let's hear that part of the exchange, and then you can have the floor. Here's Bill Collette.
So Tuesday, they put the clamps on everybody who disliked this plan. And I must say,
what does that mean? What does that mean?
That
they
means
put the
people.
Clamps
well,
on
that
you.
Means like people who wrote out questions. They picked the questions they wanted to answer. You could see the moderator thumbing through them, looking for favorable questions. She didn't do a lot of the questions that a lot of us asked, and they did the ones they wanted. Plus, the answers were incredible. So, with all due respect to these gentlemen who came to give us these speeches, it was insulting.
What do you make of that? I mean, this gets back to some of the heat that you've taken at some of these public gatherings, that they're stage-managed, manipulative, questions don't get answered. People have got doubts about the process. What do you take from all of that? How are you responding to
that's
that?
Clearly not the case. The moderator in this case was seeing questions that were identical. There were several questions related to bike infrastructure. And so instead of repeating questions that were had the exact same answers, she indicated, I have a number of questions here regarding bike and bike incorporation in the project. And so she was looking for them to sort through ones that were similar. So we did not dismiss anyone's questions. I will say that we are providing accurate answers to the questions that are being asked of us, and we're being completely transparent with those results.
What is the most perplexing bit of resistance for you that you've gotten from these three meetings?
I think the most perplexing issue is that there are members of the community who don't believe that there are critical provisions being provided by public transportation, and that public transportation really is going to be an increasing mode of choice into the future. So there are questions.
People doubt that.
Even though you don't have to turn on your TV more than a short amount of time without hearing the impacts of the next generation, both from the baby boomer generation's dependence on stop driving, as well as the millennials' desire to live in a more urban core.
We're talking about the proposed plans to create a bus rapid transit system in the Lansing area. It would provide faster bus service along the Michigan Avenue, Grand River Avenue corridor, according to proponents like our guest, Deb Alexander, the Assistant Executive Director of the Capital Area Transportation Authority. Let's get into this business of left turns. Critics say that the BRT would make it harder to make left turns off the main roads and into business parking lots. In Meridian Township, there's been a particular amount of resistance about this.
That's correct. So we would be installing medians, and with the dedicated BRT lanes being in the middle, there would be a restriction to only right in and right out of mid-block driveways, which means that you'd need to go to the next light, signalized intersection. We are also proposing to add signalized intersections so that those distances are somewhere between a quarter and a third of a mile apart. So it would be similar to what you're experiencing in East Lansing. East Lansing has very robust medians, and they have these same exact conditions where we have signalized crossings to go from the south side of the road to the north side.
Do you feel, I know critics have said that it doesn't, the layout doesn't allow enough room for delivery trucks and even more urgently, emergency vehicles.
Mm-hmm. So it is illegal for trucks to stop and unload in the roadway today. That is going to be, you know, East Lansing particularly has told us that it is against the law and they need to do a better job of enforcement, but now they have the capacity to allow it. The emergency vehicles, we did meet with the City of Lansing, City of East Lansing, and Meridian Township emergency response teams to learn more about their business and how they actually determine the fastest way to get to an emergency. We discussed with them a variety of ways in which other projects like this have provided access across the medians for emergency response and opened a dialogue that we plan to continue.
Bill Collette yesterday questioned made the point that Grand River and Michigan Avenue are already pretty robustly commercial. And one of the selling points for the BRT has been, hey, this would enhance economic development. His point seemed to be that where are all these new businesses going to go? There's already thriving businesses on the corridor here. Mm-hmm. It was a unique point. I'd like to hear what you think about that.
So economic development is a broad development scheme. It's more than just existing businesses. It's homes, population drawing, employment, and bigger employment. If you look along the corridor, there are opportunities for development and redevelopment that need to occur. And again, this is not just as CATA's view of the project. It's also the regional leaders who have said that we want a world-class region that will prosper and be sustainable.
See, that gets confusing, though, to me, because you've got isolated leaders like Mayor Bernero, I believe, who I think is a supporter of this. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. But you've got a lot of institutional resistance as well. You got Meridian Township, who's come out against it. Michigan State seems pretty clearly opposed to the idea. The Chamber. That can't be good. You've got institutional resistance you've got to overcome here.
Well, I think it's important to really look at what was communicated to us by all of those organizations. Meridian Township's resolution specifically says that we are opposed to the project in its current condition. Same with the Chamber of Commerce. They actually are a proponent of the Capital to Campus BRT solution. So I think it's important to look at that. Michigan State University has not sent us a letter that says they're opposed to the project. They say, please take great consideration to making sure that we improve pedestrian access and pedestrian crossings, which we are taking seriously and have done a great deal of research to quantify and identify what needs to be done.
These groups, though, that have come out in opposition, do you feel like you're making progress changing minds here?
We're working towards that by looking at various alternatives.
You insist that the BRT plan is only about 30% complete. You need more buy-in at this stage, I take it. And is one of your advantages here the opportunity to make the kinds of changes that you've put on the table?
It's not, 30% design is a long way from being completed. And these ideas that we're searching for and looking at and brainstorming provide us with tools in which we can consider as we move further down the project into development and design.
I mean, Judge Collette called on your agency to be audited here yesterday, and he made quite a case for that. Before we get to that, though, let me just ask you about what's next in this process. These three meetings are now behind us. What lay ahead here in the near future regarding this discussion and these plans?
CAT is following a very strict prescription that's laid out for us in regulatory law about how projects like this are to be followed. We are currently at a phase called the environmental clearance process. We have sent our environmental documents to the FTA for review and comment. We expect to get their comments back in short time, and then we'll be responding to them and modifying the document. That document will eventually be made public for the community to comment on.
In Sunday's Lansing State Journal, somebody, the name eludes me right now, said that there ought to be a public vote about this thing because there's so much resistance to it. Does clarify this for us. Does CATA have the authority to make this happen, or could government on any level step in and basically put the kibosh on this?
CATA's board of directors is made up of leaders from the five jurisdictions, the two cities and the three townships in the urban area. They are the direct grant recipient for any federal funds and would be the decision-making body. We don't take lightly, though, the importance of having community buy-in and certainly road owner buy-in on the project. CATA does not approach projects like this without working towards a coalition building and agreement.
Judge Collette is calling on CATA to be audited. He told us that CATA has been overly generous with pay incentives. He says some employees were paid up to 6 weeks worth of bonus just for showing up to work. He questions what he describes as a rainy day fund. Allow me to subject you to one more comment from Mr. Collette.
As of their financial year of 2015, they had $32 million in a, I guess they call it a rainy day fund. I'm assuming it's bigger now.
Is he right? Does CATA have a rainy day fund? And what is that fund for? Do you need that?
We do have a cash and invested funds. That funding is used to sustain our operation going forward. As you may not be aware, since 1981, when we levied our first millage, we have only increased our millage three times in that period of time. And as a result of being able to manage the resources that we're getting and extend them into the future.
Are you open to an audit?
CATA gets audited by the federal government every 3 years. It is a standing protocol, not just for CATA, but for all transit systems across the country. We just completed an audit about a year and a half ago, and we came through that audit with absolutely no findings.
Okay. We have been talking about the potential benefits and the public criticism of the proposed bus rapid transit system that's being brought forth by the Capital Area Transportation Authority. Deb Alexander is CATA's Assistant Executive Director. She's part of the team leading the BRT effort. She is retiring from CATA come January after 35 years of service. Deb, thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're wailing like a banshee as you call me on the phone. He left again forever and you cannot be alone. I floored the gas and made a pass and ran into a cop. Girl, this is gonna have to stop. I twisted my right ankle as I hurried up your stairs. Got a splinter from the handrail and I snagged my pants somewhere. Now there's mascara everywhere and I just bought this shirt. Damn, that macho bastard jerk. All of this for that? Something tells me you'll probably take him back. could live in bliss by trading all of that for this. All of that for this, yeah. It smells like you've been smoking, and there's two bottles of wine, as empty as the promises he made and left behind. Now we're pressed against each other, heart to heart, both wondering when that bloody telephone will ring. Girl, what can I say I haven't said to you before? I hate to see you hurt, and I can't take this anymore. Napoleon, his basset hound, left something on my shoe, and that's more than Mr. Wonderful left you. All of this for that, and you know what hurts me? You'll probably take him back, and it really irks me. You could live in bliss by trading all of that for this. All of that for this, yeah. All of that for this.
All of this for that. That is Don Henry and Craig Carruthers performing live here in Studio S on Current State's Live Music Friday. They have written songs that have been recorded by people that would just lead me to retire. Ray Charles recorded one of my songs. I'd just drop out. I'd be done. We'll see you later. Ray Charles, Blake Shelton, many, many others. They're Grammy winners. More from Don Henry and Craig. I want to say Don and Phil. I keep morphing on the Everly. Compared to the Everly brothers.
Yeah. Phil Carruthers. That's good.
More from Don and Craig coming up in just a little bit on Current State's Live Music Friday. The late 1930s was a time of great cultural change in America. In the face of a looming world war, the frivolity of the 20s was replaced with an industrial atmosphere that gave rise to a new artistic aesthetic. Today, historians call that period mid-century modern, and much of it was created right here in Michigan. A new book from the Michigan State Historic Preservation Office documents that era. Michigan Modern, the Design That Shaped America, is a collection of essays about the style that shaped architecture, automobiles, and furniture. Current State's Kevin Lavery spoke with two experts on modernism. Brian Conway is the State Historic Preservation Officer and the book's co-editor, and Leslie Edwards is the head archivist at the Cranbrook Educational Community, the suburban Detroit campus that taught many of the period's greatest minds. They met at the Orpheus Fountain, the gateway to the iconic 1942 Cranbrook Art Museum.
We looked at the foundation of modernism during the period roughly 1900 up to World War II, the war period, and then the post-war period where we really saw the boom in housing and architecture and design.
Leslie, you are the head archivist here at Cranbrook. Why is this a special place in your mind?
It's a special place for a variety of reasons. You think of this guy, George Booth, who lived in Detroit. Had a lot of industrialist friends. He came out here in 1904 and saw this landscape, which was basically farm country. There was nothing here, and his friends thought he was crazy, and he had this vision. He initially wanted to just build a summer home, and as time went on, he had Albert Kahn come out and design the first buildings on campus were Farm Group Number 1, and it was a working farm where Kingswood School now is. And then Albert Kahn designed Cranbrook House. And at that time, the Booths decided to live out here permanently. And he really was a visionary. To think that this one man could come up with this whole idea for this place that's education and art and architecture and science and religion all combined into one is really something.
Around 1925 is when George Booth hired Eliel Saarinen. That's when things really began to get going here at Cranbrook. In the 20s, we had a period that lasted into the 30s, the Art Deco period. Somewhere in the late 30s, though, as Cranbrook was really coming into its own, we started to see, as the war was approaching, a real shift in art and architecture away from the Deco period. What was really driving that?
Well, actually, during that period here in Michigan, we saw a number of things happening which may have, in the broader view, kind of pushed away Art Deco, or what later became Art Moderne. In Michigan, we had, of course, the auto industry and the factory designs by Albert Kahn. And those factory designs, because of the auto industry being such a worldwide phenomenon, the entire world was looking at Detroit to see what was happening in terms of architecture, and in particularly factory design. We had Albert Kahn together, a Detroit architect, together with his brothers, who were hired by the auto industry to develop buildings to handle the capacity of automobiles on multiple stories. He developed a system of a concrete factory design, which later then became patented and was later used throughout the world in factory design, commonly called the Truscon structural system. And that clean and simple sleekness, utilitarian look of the factory buildings caught the attention of architects worldwide. So I think as that became more popular, that tended to push out some of the earlier, more historical styles like Art Deco.
So the utilitarian chic movement kind of came up out of necessity then?
Right. It was a movement towards simplification. It was actually in the pre-war era. People were looking for something new.
Well, how did the public, how did the consumer feel about that shift from something that was pretty ornate to something that was a little more stripped down and looked a little more cookie cutter? And I don't mean that to be an insult of the design, but it really was a much more Spartan appearance than Art Deco.
Well, there were certain things that happened that I think influenced popular culture. One important thing was the development of the General Motors Technical Center, initially designed by Eliel Saarinen, and then the commission taken over by his son, Eero Saarinen. Today it's credited as being an Eero Saarinen design. But that was something that the general public really hadn't seen before. Yet it was coming from this country's, or perhaps this world's, largest corporation at the time. It received a tremendous amount of public exposure, including on the opening day a televised speech by President Eisenhower. So it was a popular phenomenon that everybody knew what was happening. And of course, everybody was interested in automobiles. We also saw the furniture industry changing from the historical styles to a more modern look and finding a new clientele, actually in pre-war and then certainly more so in post-war, as people were looking for a fresh new look. And that was highly publicized, and we see it then moving into popular culture, in advertisements, in magazines that heavily promoted lifestyle, like House and Garden or House Beautiful or others. So it was a lot of promotion.
In addition to that, I think you can go even a little bit farther back than GM Tech Center. There were some shifts that were happening nationwide. You had industrial designers like Raymond Loewy were starting to, and Walter Teague, doing a more streamlined look in terms of even locomotives, or Russell Wright's American Way line of furnishings. And there was a movement to also, even artists here at Cranbrook were designing for, you know, the middle class person as opposed to the wealthy person who might have been able to afford these more flourishing styles. You were trying to get more simplified versions and made of more contemporary less expensive materials, but that that were of high design. And there were a lot of artists here at Cranbrook in the 30s that were moving in that direction. And then I think another big component is the 1939 World's Fair.
Gateway to the $155 million Wonderland. From far and near come countless visitors. By every mode of travel, every means of transportation, they arrive to view the marvels of the greatest exposition in history.
That was a huge influence on popular culture, and the introduction of new materials like Lurex and aluminum and neon, and these things were all helping to drive this movement towards modernism.
We're talking with Leslie Edwards, who is the head archivist at the Cranbrook Academy, and also Brian Conway, who is the state historic preservation officer for the state of Michigan. We're going to leave the grounds of the Art Museum now, late 1930s architecture. We're going to go to Kingswood and take a look at that. That was really the stamp of the Saarinen family. And Leslie, again, explain to me what Kingswood really was.
Kingswood was designed and opened in 1931 by Eliel Saarinen at the request of George and Ellen Booth as a school for girls, as opposed to Cranbrook School, which was the campus for the boys. Okay, so where we are currently, on the left is the dining hall and on the right is the auditorium. This is Kingswood School for Girls, and it looks like they're doing repair on the floor. That's a constant here. It's such a large campus, it always needs upkeep. But again, here you can see the windows here, and over here you've got triangle patterns, even the light fixtures and how they reflect light up onto the ceiling. Just watch your step here. One of my favorite parts of the dining hall is the way, again, the repeated patterns. You've got the triangles and the leaded glass, and if you look, you can see the stepped chimney pattern, and then above, triangles that are made from the light reflecting on the ceiling. I mean, it's genius, really. So, Brian, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the furniture?
Well, the furniture was an early project of Eero Saarinen, the son of Eliel and Loja Saarinen. And it was part of the philosophy of an entire family project with the tapestry on the far end, designed and executed by Mrs. Saarinen,
yep, right.
Loja Saarinen.
And that has a very distinctly medieval look to it.
It's actually Finnish, more Finnish in character. And if you look up above you, you've got stencil work designed by Pipsan Saarinen, the daughter of Loja and Eliel. Again, a total work of art.
Even though modernism was about form follows function, there certainly was a healthy dose of artistry involved.
Oh, absolutely. Everything here on this campus is designed, from the brick paving, the textiles, the furniture. It was all part of that total work of art, and the Saarinen family was really good at that.
Brian, your organization, the State Historic Preservation Office, is sponsoring a series of events that are themed with Michigan Modern Design that are happening this month in October. And they are coming up pretty quickly, actually. What are some of those events?
We are opening a temporary exhibit in the Michigan Historical Museum in downtown Lansing on Saturday, October 8th. That exhibit is called Minds in Modernism. Then we are also doing a series of lectures right here at Cranbrook starting on Sunday, October 16th, and following for the next three Sundays through November 6th. Each Sunday will be a series of lectures featuring three speakers from across the country dealing with various topics about Michigan modernism, including such things as a day on Minoru Yamasaki, a day on designing America's homes, and then a final day on the General Motors in designing the American dream of the automobile.
And Minoru Yamasaki, of course, best known, among other works, for the World Trade Center design.
That's correct, and people don't realize he had his office right here in Southeast Michigan and designed buildings throughout the world, including many magnificent buildings right here in Michigan, which we'll discuss during those lecture series.
Brian Conway is the State Historic Preservation Officer for the state of Michigan. He's also a co-editor of the brand new book, Michigan Modern, Design That Shaped America, published this week. Brian, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure.
And Leslie Edwards is the head archivist at the Cranbrook Educational Community, which is one of the premier art and architectural design schools in this country, if not the world. Thank you, Leslie, for your time as well.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Don Henry and Craig Carruthers are in East Lansing to perform a couple of times here over this weekend. And we've got them here first thing on a Live Music Friday on WKAR's Current State. Let's hear a song called Guys Like That.
He brings her flowers every night. They go out dancing on the weekend. Always romantic and polite. And he buys her little presents for no reason. Yeah, he's as thoughtful as can be. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me. He goes to church, he doesn't cuss. He's not a drinker or a smoker. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that she can trust. Not to lose her mother's necklace playing poker. Yeah, he's the picture of integrity. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me. And he knows what she was wearing when they met. And her birthday's never something he forgets. He makes her breakfast in bed and it's delicious. And he'll even wash and dry the dishes. When she's in a mood, he understands. He knows when to talk and when to listen. And when she's pouring out her heart, he holds her hand. He can hear her problems without trying to fix them. Yeah, he's a catch, and all her friends agree. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me. And he likes to cuddle by the fireside. And at the ending of Titanic, well, they both cried. He doesn't suffer from embarrassing dysfunction in the bedroom, and he can even take instruction. He never gives her reason to be jealous. After work, he always goes straight home. He doesn't hang out at the strip club with the fellas. He just doesn't have that hound dog chromosome. But he's a three-time world's best husband nominee. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me. And he runs his own successful company. And he volunteers at a children's charity. And he never gave her hepatitis B. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me.
Don Henry and Craig Carruthers performing live for us here in Studio S. Yet another song about inadequacy, it would seem. Is that a specialty of yours there?
Yes, we're ironic.
Well said. Well said.
There's some desperation there. There's some envy.
That's actually taken from, I was watching an old Sid Caesar show of shows, and there's it's from a 65, 70-year-old skit where called The Poker Game, where the henpecked husbands are all talking about how brave they are, and he finally says, you know, a guy gives her flowers, he's romantic, he takes her out to dinner. Guys like that make it hard for guys like me. And I went, oh, man, I'm stealing that.
There is a song waiting to be written. Well, you two are Grammy winners. Let's talk about something. I mean, those carry some weight. Don's a Grammy winner. Craig, we're still waiting.
The reflected glory. Okay. As I sit next to him.
These carry some weight in the music room world. Don, you wrote co-wrote Kathy Mattea's Where Have You Been? With a guy named John Vesner. It won a Grammy in 91 for Best Female Country Performance. Let's hear a little bit of that song.
Where have you been? I've looked for you forever and a day. Where have you been? I'm just not myself when you're away.
Are you responsible for the lyrics and the music of that song?
Yeah, as we say, the lyrics and the words. it's a true story about his grandparents, and he told me all about this. We hadn't planned on writing it, but he was currently going through that. This was years ago, and I said, hey, that might be a good idea for a song. And I had this little riff, la 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 la, and I said, what if we said, where have you been? And he filled in the gaps, and we were off running.
What's it like to look back at that 25 years into the, I mean, that's some, as they say, after they win the Cotton Bowl, you know, that's something no one can ever take away from you. You won a Grammy.
Well, it's great that I think it's really great to win a Grammy, I guess. It's, you know, you don't really set out to do that. It just kind of falls into place that way sometimes, or rarely. But for me, the song, when I wrote it with John, I was only about 27 years old, 26 years old. And so it didn't have the effect on me. I understood what it was about, and I knew John was going through that. But since then, those 25 years, I've gone through it with my grandparents and my dad, and so I that song means more to me now than it did then when we wrote it.
How many songs have you each written, let's say individually? Don, what about you?
Wow, I could have 1,000. Yeah, I don't know,
over 1,000.
Yeah,
and over. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, over 1,000.
Over 1,000 songs. You're doing this all the time.
All the time.
Also forever. You know, we're each 150 years old, so
helps.
We've been doing it since we were in our 40s.
That helps. Okay. Kathy Mattea has recorded your music, Craig. We should talk about some of the artists. Trisha Yearwood, Peter Paul and Mary. Yeah. Talk to us about the process of getting songs into the hands of what, managers,
well,
performers?
That's the most mysterious part. I think it happens in such a random way sometimes. Sometimes, like, because Kathy had recorded because she had recorded Where Have You Been, she was always curious about hearing new Don Henry songs. And so when Don and I wrote BFD, it was just one of the songs, you know, Kathy, always send me a new song. So that became a kind of an insider relationship. And so that's how that song got cut. The Trisha cut for me was the first one that happened, and I had come to Nashville to go around and have some meetings, and I had been on Atlantic Records before that and had been dropped without my record coming out. And so I was sort of telling that story about it, and here was the song that was supposed to be my single, and this one particular meeting, this woman listened to it, and she started to cry, and you know, part of me is like, oh, I feel awful, and part of me is, home run!
Yeah!
You know, and she said, I know exactly who to play this for. And again, the weirdness of it, there's no direct route. There's no straight ahead thing like you. There's no step-by-step, here's how you do it. Because the only reason that even got listened to was because at that time, Trisha's producer's assistant and this particular person I played the song for had just broken up, and they were going to be friends, but it was painful and new. And she thought this song was so important that she broke they're not talking to each other to play it for them.
Oh, a rapprochement.
Yeah, exactly. And so that, because of their relationship, he listened more intensely than a lot of times people will listen.
But you've got to be out there, and I understand you're regulars at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, which can't hurt. I mean, you're out there.
It
people
does
are
help.
Audiences
it does help.
Are. I mean, is that a real catalyst to
connecting? It was for Where Have You Been? It was the night that my co-writer John Vesner sang that at the Bluebird, that he got a standing ovation, and Kathy Mattea and her record, one of her record A&R guys, happened to be there, and he leaned over and said, "You've got to record that song." Mm.
It certainly can be.
Yeah.
I have been mystified by the songwriting process for decades. I really have. I'm enough of a music fan that I've just always been intrigued. What makes a great song from a stinker? You know, what is that critical magic that goes into this? Describe the songwriting process as best you can for us. It's a mysterious thing.
It is. Anybody could write a song, of course. And some people with no musical training are great songwriters. A song, if you look it up, the first definition of it is words meant to be sung to a melody. So Chopin, that's not songs. Robert Frost, that's not songs. That combination of words and music. And so chords actually are kind of late to the game for songs, because we sang songs before we had instruments. So, you know, you have an idea and you got to figure out how to talk about it in 3 minutes. And so brevity is key, unlike my speaking in real time.
Don, what about you? I mean,
Craig and I both teach as well. And the more that I've taught through the years, it doesn't seem that mysterious to me anymore, the process of writing songs. We break it down in a way that it feels like anybody who really wants to just have some fun and it can come up with something, because songs, you don't have to be literally correct. You can say, you can sing la la las and tra la las, and that works as a lyric sometimes. And so songs live outside of the norm of orchestra music and prose or novels or whatever. That you can play. They're more flexible. They're more pliable. And so they're not. I think anyone can maybe write one. I don't know what it takes to write a great song, like a Paul McCartney song or something. You know, from the day back in the day.
Well, see, that's what intrigues me though, because there are a slew of just perfectly ordinary songs, and then there are those that just transcend everything. It's like, what is that magic?
Well, and I think if that was really magic in a bottle, that we would only write those.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish.
Some of it's an accident. You stumble on an idea, and you stumble on a notion.
And it takes off.
And it takes off.
Yeah. We should point out here that most of the songs we've heard here today are from Don and Craig's CD called 2F by Car. But the last one we heard, Guys Like That Make It Hard for Guys Like Me, comes from your solo album,
my new one, yeah.
Craig, called Alpenglow. How can people find your music?
Well, they can find them from us. We'll be in the parking lot right after the show. We're doing that lunch show today, and we're playing tonight at the Pump House.
Yeah, donhenry.com, craigcarruthers.com.
Okay, that's simple.
Yeah, you can order directly from us. I think CD Baby and some other sources have our CDs as well. Even iTunes, I think, has.
Yeah, my record's too new to be on iTunes yet, but I don't think we ever put 2F by Car on iTunes.
No, the thing that we like about this little duo record we made is that we only sell it out on our shows, so you have to come out to the shows if you want again.
Okay.
Although you can order it from us from our website.
Yes. Well, the Broad Art Museum at lunchtime here today, the Pump House in East Lansing later this evening. Craig, you alluded to teaching. Craig, you've taught at the University of Miami and given songwriting workshops all over the world. Is there a magic to teaching? I imagine there is. That's almost as mysterious a process as songwriting.
I think it's hard.
I've been teaching at the University of Miami for about 4 years, and I don't know if anybody is going to be listening to this on the web who's down there, but a shout out to Stay Safe. You know, Matthew's down there right now.
Oh, yeah.
But as sort of looking behind the curtain sometimes wrecks the magic for some people. Like when I was a kid and I would hear a record, it just sounded like a thing. But as I've become more and more knowledgeable and become a record producer, I hear it almost like an exploded diagram. And you can take apart songwriting. How long does one part go before you feel like you need it to change? And that's the thing a lot of times young songwriters, either chronologically or you start when you're 50 and you haven't done it very much, inexperienced songwriters, they'll write too much. They'll talk around it a lot, and they don't know how to condense. They don't know how to concentrate. Sometimes the sections are too much like each other. sometimes.
But repetition can be a powerful tool,
yeah,
too.
It's a double-edged sword.
Some songs are very repetitive, one note for, you know, 12 times or something like that.
But it's very, there are not many, I know. There's not very many of those.
But repetition is a thing, a plus for us. What we do.
We want you to play us out here in just a few minutes, but I got one more question here for you. And it was there and it went away as soon.
Just if we're playing, just talk over top of us.
That's just like writing songs, man.
Here it is. Who would you like to record your song if you could pick somebody and could command them to record one of your songs? Craig, who would you like to interpret one of yours?
Well, for artistic reasons, I mean, Don and I wrote a song called Schenectady, which is about a soldier returning, and it would be great if Bruce Springsteen was doing outside songs, which he's not. He only does songs he wrote. But from a commercial standpoint, I think probably, you know, whoever's at the top of the charts.
Yeah,
I'd like their version just fine.
Hey, you know, Ray Charles recorded one of my songs. And so that, for me, like you said, you feel like, well, that's it. I reached, but, you know, and you're never satisfied, but yeah, Ray.
Ray Charles. Yeah. What's the name of the track you wrote?
It's called Class Reunion, and it's on an album called The Pages of My Mind, and Billy Sherrill produced it, the legendary Billy Sherrill.
Nashville guy. Ultimate Nashville guy. We'll send some people to the website who will be listening to that song here, hopefully. On Monday's Current State, we've got the Two Chick Speaker Bureau. Kathy Hoekstra and Susan Demas talk to us about the upcoming elections next month and much, much more. We're going to let Craig and Don play us out here on WKAR's Current State. Best of luck to you. Thank you for being
here. Great to be here.
I used to be wound so tight, burned out days and restless nights. Then I met you, now I'm all right. That's how easy goes. I used to run around in a terrible state, felt like I was gonna go Section 8. But baby, you're my great escape. That's how easy goes. I'm dancing to a different drum, steady and slow. I've learned to take it as it comes. That's how easy goes. That's how easy goes. Well, sometimes I could be a drama queen, hit for the bottom like a submarine. But you pull me to the surface and you help me breathe. That's how easy goes. I'm dancing to a different drum, steady and slow. I've learned to take